Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. My name's Kyle, and today I'm joined by Manoj Agarwal. Agarwal.
Yeah.
I did? Oh, okay.
Yeah, you got it.
I second-guessed myself in the middle of it there. Manoj is a global thought leader in AI and startups, and normally I'd probably want to pick your brain on AI, but man, you've got such a fascinating story that I just kind of have to hear more about that. Why don't we just kind of jump into that then? So tell me about starting out making, what, $2 an hour on a factory floor and then going to being a global thought leader in the AI space? Like, that's crazy.
Actually, it was $2 a day.
$2 a day? Oh, yeah, my gosh.
So I grew up in a small town in India, and this was back in 1980s. Opportunities were very scarce. Opportunities for jobs and education and all of that. So my career started working in this factory. And
what did you guys make?
Nuts and bolts.
Okay. You know, so you're like
industrial.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So forging and that kind of stuff, or
correct.
Is it all cut?
Yeah. Forging and furnaces, and you know, it was it's northern part of India, so it's the summers are like, you know, very, very hot, like 120 degrees, 130 degrees. And then you have to work with the furnaces, which are like 2000 degrees, you know, melting hot steel. So
2800, I remember. I used to work in a steel mill for about 8 or 10 years in Arizona for so. In Phoenix, I get to be about 120, 125 there too.
Miserable.
Exactly. They say a steel mill is the hottest and coldest place you'll ever work, and sometimes at the same time.
exactly. So that's, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So it sort of molded me into somebody who can like understand the mechanics of how things progress, because in a factory it's a choreograph, you know, it's a choreographed synchronicity of this machine, then this machine. In the entire process, you put in the raw material and out comes the finished product, right?
Yeah.
And you have to do it like again and again and again, and if there is any break in the middle, as you know, like the entire process stops. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very costly, so you have to be on top of it to make sure that everything is aligned well and the quality is maintained. And then when you work with industrial goods, there is very, very precise specifications that you need to meet. And if it's like 0.5 millimeters too big, too small, like it's rejected.
Yep.
So that precision got embedded in my mind somehow. But obviously, I wanted to change my life. Like, that was not my destiny. So,
well, hold on now. We got a lot more material we can mine out of this. So, what did you do specifically at the factory? Were you maintenance or production side?
All of it. You know, so
oh,
I was.
Oh,
yeah,
so you didn't have delineated roles like we do here.
Yeah. So it was like, helping maintain the flow of the material, helping with the repairs of the machines, keeping track of inventory, you know, packaging, and also invoicing, you know, paperwork, all of that.
I had people like you at the mill I worked at.
it was a very cool experience at the time. Obviously, you don't realize what it is meant for and why are you going through this, but then afterwards in life you realize how much that shaped you.
How much that, like, learning the troubleshooting methodologies that you probably learned in that,
absolutely,
I would assume have helped you in like programming fields
and those types of things.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So and those are the things that, you know, you build a good foundation, and then even in the factories, what happened was I was just sitting at lunchtime one day and I was flipping through these business magazines and I read these stories of business tycoons who, you know, built like empires. And I was like, hey, man, like, you know, what is so special about these people that they get to do these kind of things and I'm here in the factory? And so that inspired me to sort of pursue, okay, what can life be like? Mm-hmm. And at that moment, you know, obviously didn't know what it means and, you know, what to do about it and where to go from there. But I found that, okay, let me try to look at some of my passions, like what excites me. Mm-hmm. And so that led me to search for, you know, new avenues of like new fields of work, new type of work and study and all that. Computers and internet were very, very new at that time. I'm talking about like 1994.
Okay. That was, I was right in the middle of, I was just getting ready to start high school, I think, in a couple of years at that point. Yeah. That was right when they were getting big. I think I just found internet porn at that point. Oh my God. but yeah, I just found the dark side of the internet at that age, I think.
So for me, like at that time, there was no internet. We were in a small town, right? So,
When you say small town, what does a small town in India look like?
Maybe like 100,000 people, 150,000 people.
That's what you call a small town.
But the density is like packed. It's like, you know, the area will be maybe like, you know, I don't know how to compare it, but like a small suburb. And so here in North America, small suburb will be like, you know, 5,000, 10,000 people. So mm-hmm. think that much area, but 15
the same
times
area,
more.
But just, oh my God. So it's like a downtown.
Exactly.
Yeah. Man, there's so many people in India. So how much competition was there for work then?
Oh my goodness. So if you have like, you know, you have entrance exams for universities, you have jobs. So literally, if you apply, like if there is a job opening, you can expect about 1,000 people applying for it.
Wow. For pretty much any job.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Is that why so many you guys immigrate?
Well, there's, you know, immigration is like the reason, like it's a spillover of talent and you know, what that does is, in my opinion, the survival instinct kicks in and you have to excel at it because out of 1,000 people, 950 will not be even looked at. They're like, you know, they don't even come into the consideration.
The resume doesn't look good enough. They toss it out right off the bat.
So 50, you know, you'll have to jump through many hoops to do it. So you have to excel at things, and what that does it creates excellent thinkers, excellent execution people, managers, and those type of like, you know, most people that excel in India, they are like really top.
You get the cream of the crop because there's so much competition. But at the flip side of that is there's a lot of really good people, good ideas that are not able to get funded or get work.
So immigration has been part of India's history, even from colonial times, because when the British ruled India for like 250 years. So they used to ship a lot of people from India to their colonies to work, like, you know, all over the world.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, with that ancestry, with that heritage, people already were exploring, okay, how do I go out of India?
So you have less of the people that want to just sit in one spot all the time. Like you've already got the culture and heritage of going
searching. It's everywhere. Like, you know, all kinds of people, like, you know, people who want to stay in their homeland and they're in the place of birth.
Yeah. So I'm not like that at all. I've always been wherever they're going to pay me, I'm going there.
So when you have like, you know, 1.3 billion people, you have all shades of humanity. What we see, you know, the thing is what we see outside of India, like immigrants and all that, it's like a very tiny percent, maybe 0.5% of Indians in India.
Right.
But yet there are so many, you know, when you see all over the world, you know, you say, oh my God, like so many Indians immigrate, you know.
Well, I know I thought a lot of it was coming just to take advantage of like the education system that we have here, but India has actually been really on the rise as far as building out their infrastructure, education, industry. Like when I left the steel mill, we were actually starting to buy our electrodes from HEG, which is located in your country, because they made a really good product for much cheaper. And like, I think they're starting to close the gap now.
Yeah, absolutely. Now India is growing at a faster rate than North America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so, a lot of things are growing faster than us, but developed nations don't tend to continue growing as far as population
goes,
it seems.
Correct.
Yeah.
Not just population, like, you know, they have launched, like, you know, they launched the satellite, rocket to the other side of the moon.
And you guys landed one on Mars too, didn't you? Didn't you? Like that was like 3 or 4 years ago. It cost like $3 million to send a thing to.
Exactly.
How the fuck did you guys do that for $3 million?
So that's the thing. Like scrappiness is inbuilt in, like, you know. You know, this is my story as well. Like, you know, going from $2 a day, like talk, you know, being at the global level, it's all scrappiness. Like, you know, okay, like let's focus on the fundamentals, let's not focus on the bells and whistles, because you just can't afford it. And you learn to, like, you know, really be resourceful in everything that you do.
I feel like the steel industry is a great place to learn how to be resourceful too. Like you mentioned, the only thing that matters is getting that production line up and running. If you got to string out contactors and buckets to make a system work for, you know, the next 6 hours so you can get to your scheduled outage, like you do it. And you get some really creative problem solving going on.
Oh
there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then,
but you said it wasn't for you though. So what? Talk to me about the getting out and finding something better. Computer programming, I think you said mentioned.
Yeah, computer programming, you know. So computer programming was like, you know, I didn't know where it's going to lead me. You know, I was sort of like saying, okay, hey, I'm doing all these invoicing and paperwork. Like, you know, I saw that, okay, you know, things will get computerized. So let me just learn a little bit about computers. But when I started programming, like simple programs, I was like, okay, this is what I love doing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, in the lab computer, because we had shared computers. It was not like one-on-one. So we had to book time to get access to the computer. So I used to like beg all my friends, hey, please, can you give me your time so I can, you know.
So, and this was expensive too, right? The class that you signed up for, I think you said it was like a year's salary.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Oof. So I could not.
How do you make that investment though? Like, did you have family at the time, or were you kind of on your own able to do it?
I had family, but I used some shady method. Like, I'm not proud of you know what I had to do.
You said resourcefulness, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. so, the first year I could not, and then the second year I saved enough to, like, you know. So do it. And then I took full advantage of it. You know, I spent like hours and hours. Like sometimes I'll go at nighttime and spend a lot of time just programming and just, you know, like immersing myself into programming. So I knew that is what my path was and I wanted to do that.
Did I see you met your wife there too?
Yeah. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So. I met my girlfriend, and now, you know, she became my wife. Now she's my ex-wife. So, anyway, yeah. So
sorry, I didn't mean to draw that.
No, it's all good.
A little deeper.
No, it's all good. So yeah, so all of that sort of combined together, you know, changed the trajectory of my life, and then I came to Canada, and this was the .com boom time, and you know, it was very easy. To get into the software industry and
they were throwing money at everything at that point in time. I think anything could have gotten funded during those days.
And the funny thing is, like, you know, the first boss I had, he launched a company. It was like almost like a predecessor to Amazon, so very much similar concept. And at one point, his company was valued at $600 million. Like right at launch, you know, this was 1999. And
And where is it at now?
Zero.
Yeah. I hope he sold some of that.
No. It was not a good story for him as well. But for me, it was a brand new world, like, you know, coming to North America and just saying, oh, you know, how like culture shock, and then, you know, how the business works and all of that.
What were some of the differences that stood out to you then? I'm always kind of curious about that.
Less competition, you know, more opportunity, bigger numbers. Like, you know, right away, your mind starts to think, because Indian currency is like, you know, even at that time, today is like 50 to 1. So, you know, $1.
That's the rupee?
Yeah, one rupee. So, so imagine, like, you know, $2 a day is $2 a day sounds like below poverty line, but over there you could survive with $2 a day.
Yeah.
So when you come here, it's like, oh my God, like the minimum wage is like $15 an hour. And like you start to multiply. Oh my goodness. Like, you know, that's, you know, I'm rich. I'm rich, you know, you know,
man, I never heard anybody explain it like that, but man, yeah. But then you're probably kind of shocked by the cost of living of everything then, I'm assuming.
Yeah. But you know, our human mind is very flexible. Mm-hmm. It's very, very flexible. So when you start to think you are rich, then your lifestyle starts to adjust towards that. Yes, cost of living is high, mm-hmm. but then you are able to afford a home with 2 bedrooms mm-hmm. and like decent meals. You can afford a car. You can, you know, eat out sometimes, you know.
All things that we consider standard things or even essentials here, not necessarily. Those are actually luxuries.
Correct. Correct. Yep. Exactly. So your mind start to like mold in that way, because these are luxuries. In fact,
mm-hmm.
you know, survival is humans can survive. Like I have seen like, you know, life up close and you cannot, like most people cannot imagine what conditions exist in this world for humans to survive.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I hear, I just recently heard about this, actually, there's a culture shock from people who come over, you know, from other countries. One of the things that tends to shock them the most is a grocery store. Did you have a similar experience walking into a grocery store for the first time? What was that like?
It's like abundance. It's like, you know, it's like, my goodness, man, like, you can pretty much buy anything. Nobody's like, and you can just pick up stuff, go to the counter and pay for it, like, because in India, like, you know, you have small stores and you have to say, okay, I want this, and the store owner will go in the back of the store, like even groceries, you know.
Yeah.
So you have to know exactly what you want. Like, you can't just like roam around and say, okay, I feel
you don't
like
get to pick the best pieces out there that you like.
But you could pick a little bit, but you have to know exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, but now there are, you know, big supermarkets in India as well.
Right.
At that time, it was like, okay, this is like luxury, again, luxury, abundance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have almost like, you know, your worldview starts to shift. It's like, you know, your standards are so high, you know, all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And almost like, it's unfair in some ways.
Yeah.
Honestly speaking, because like, look at supermarkets, like they'll throw away good produce if it doesn't look good.
Right.
If it does, you know, if the color is not right, if it's like, and that's like adding to the cost of what we eat. But so you start to notice these nuances in the world and how it's all set up, and in the way, at a global level, you know, we enjoy a luxury here that is funded by, you know, the rest of the world in some fashion, you know, because everything is made in China here.
Right.
But the reason why we are able to afford those luxuries is because every step of the way, the standard of living keeps going down and down and down and down. And the person who is actually manufacturing it, sitting in China or India or Vietnam or Philippines or Bangladesh, they are living at a very, very low standard of life.
But to be able, I did hear a good argument from an economist who said the flip side of that is that that's lifting up all the other markets too.
No,
if you look at it that way.
I'm not I'm not criticizing anything.
I'm just trying to give both sides of that.
Both
arguments, at least. Absolutely. Because I struggle with the same thing. It's like, feels like we're being, our lifestyle is funded on the struggles of the rest of the world. But
yeah, and it's not like everything is permanent in this world. You know, if you look at the history, you know, for example, Netherlands used to be a superpower.
Right. So did Portugal.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Spain, yeah. Exactly. And now if you go to these countries, you know, even though they're part of the European Union, you know, they're not as well to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's all a cycle. And now, like, think about China, like 30 years ago, it used to be peasant community, mm-hmm. you know, but now it's a superpower. Even in India, as I said, like, you know, 30 years ago, it was like a totally different country. Now it is like one of the top 7 countries, you know, in the world.
I actually look at India as being a bigger challenge, I think, to world powers.
I think they are playing it very nicely. They are sort of like, you know, friends with everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the Indian way anyways. Like, you know, Indians are generally very, very accommodating to different viewpoints and are able to form alliances even with different.
Well, I mean, look at the way the countries, even the politics in your country. You have like what, 20 some political parties? You have more than 20 languages, I think, in the country. So have to be able to work with different backgrounds, different cultures, even because. It's even more diverse, I think, than the U.S. is. And the U.S. is considered pretty diverse.
Absolutely. Yeah. So these are the things that work for India. And coming from there, here, it was a culture shock. But the thing is, now when I go back, I get another culture shock because it has progressed so rapidly that I don't recognize that country anymore.
Right.
You know?
Right.
In many ways, it's more advanced. Like, you know, if you like here, you know, we say, let me order something on Amazon. It'll show up like the same day or the next day, you know, and that's like fantastic. Over there, it's like 30 minutes. Okay. At your door.
Well, you mean you got to compete, right? To stand out.
I think that's kind of
what the point. Yeah, that makes sense.
30 minutes, and then the guy will go up 20 set of stairs, they will treat you like royalty, you know. It's fantastic to see how the world is changing overall.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more then about what you're doing now then. So how'd you go from programming schools then to global thought leader in the AI, even referenced by, I think, President Obama, I think, referenced you in a speech?
Yeah.
So explain that gap.
to be precise, not me, but my work.
Your work. Okay.
So Bill Gates mentioned it. Obama mentioned it. So, what happened is, as I said earlier, like the mindset of precision and scale that got embedded into my DNA in the factory. Now, going into technology, I'm always looking for what's next. You know, okay, the engineer in me is always curious. Okay, let me get into this. You know, this is new technology. So I started getting into building startups, helping people build their technology. So that was all cool. You know, it's just fun for me.
Yeah.
Then I started getting into AI in
2005. What did AI look like then?
So AI, a lot of people don't understand that AI has been around since the 1960s, actually. Back then, it's just an evolution of technology. So think about cars. How were they back in 2005? Like, you know, Bluetooth speaker in a car was like, oh my God, like this is fantastic new technology that I can, you know, talk on the phone while driving. And now it's like you could live in a car today.
Right.
So it's equivalent of that. AI used to be like really like primitive. The amount of data that you had access to was primitive. The amount of compute power you had was.
This was before algorithms, or were using algorithms?
Algorithms have always been.
But AI, the computing power is probably just not there yet to be able to fully take advantage of it.
Correct. But even at that time, like, we were able to create some really meaningful technologies, like adaptive learning, meaning, you know, the very first project in 2005, like we did was, you know, in a classroom of 50 students, everybody in a normal classroom gets the same curriculum. But with AI, we were able to understand that some students are further ahead, some students are, you know, needing more help. So we were able to personalize the curriculum in the same classroom for each student.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So
why did that not take off?
No, no, it took off. Like, it got bought out by a billion-dollar company, and they are implementing it at universities.
They are? Oh.
Yeah.
They need to do that sooner, though. Grade school.
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, as far as, you know, it sounds from the outset like, you know, the technology moves really, really fast, but adoption of technology is not that.
Always. Yes.
So
the last steel mill I worked at, you want to talk about, it was built in like the 1800s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
they're still using Excel spreadsheets for their level two system. Mm-hmm. They have no level two.
Yeah, exactly. So so it takes time to get technology in the hands of people.
Yeah, because there's a cost to converting to the new technology that, man, you want to talk about something that creates a lot of inertia like that right there. That is a really hard thing to get people to commit to. Because then you got to learn the new systems, and then you got to spend the money, and then you got like the learning period for the first year or two while everyone tries to figure out how it works.
Yeah, there's lots that happens between creating the technology and then, you know, adopting it. And as you said, like money and security, job security of people, their own personal kind of agendas. And that's what we see with AI today as well. Like, you know, a lot of people pushing back on AI, you know, thinking that, oh, it's going to take away my job and all of that.
Yeah, we talked about that not too long ago. And I don't see the jobs that it's going to take away are the jobs that are always in danger of being taken away. But it opens up a lot more new jobs if you just go and now is the time to go and learn how these systems and things work. Yeah. So you can go and be the guy to fix it when it breaks.
Correct. Not only that, you know, when I speaking about job, like when I talk to people and I say, okay, you know, what is your plan with your job? Like, what is it that you want? Mm-hmm. They're like, you know, I want to work hard. I want to get more promotions. I want to, like, you know, rise to the top. And then when I'm like 65, I want to retire. So I'm like, okay, so how about you get there in next 5 years rather than next 30 years, you know, and you earn 10 times more and you get promoted to a, you know, next level. They're like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, how can I do that? So I'm like, okay, well, how can you do that is like, you know, you create more value for your employer.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you create more value? You know, you could either work 80 hours a week or you can figure out a way to do more in the same amount of time.
Yeah. Doing more for less is also a way to create value.
Yeah. So now, does that make sense how AI can help you? Because if you use AI, you will be able to produce 5 times more value in half the time.
Yes.
And that's your path to, you know, promotions and success and money and all of that. And, you know, your retirement, early retirement. Now it makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's not about AI taking your job away. It's about somebody else, as you said, somebody else who knows AI will take your job away because they'll be able
to use it better and quicker.
Yeah.
AI is just a time saver right now. AI is not good at creating new innovative content or new innovative things, at least from what I've seen. It's not as good at that.
It's how, you know, like, think of it this way, right? Let's say you're 18 years old and I give you a Ferrari and or a Formula One racing car. Now, you're 18, you could probably drive it, but you're going to run into, like, all kinds of,
everything.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to run into everything with it.
So it's like a waste of all that engineering horsepower and all of that.
Yeah.
To give that machine to an 18-year-old. Now, that 18-year-old can go to a race car school and get really, really good at driving a car like that. And now it's a, you know, it's like you can become a champion and win races. So the idea behind AI is such a powerful force that you need to learn how to get the most value. So when you say creativity, think about creativity. What is creativity is like, we are not, humans are not inherently like, okay, I can just create something with magic. It's about working with ideas that have been existing in the past. Like ideas build upon ideas, right?
Okay.
So think of a simple example. Let's say I'm a physician. Let's say I'm a doctor, right?
Yeah.
So I went to school for 10 years, worked my ass off, and I learned all about medicine. Now, if I want to be creative, there are many other fields of study that I can incorporate into my art or my profession. Mm-hmm. So think traditional Chinese medicine, think acupuncture, think Ayurveda. So these are fields of study that have been around for thousands and thousands of years. But I have no time or energy to go deeper into these fields and learn Western medicine. But now with AI, I can say, hey, I'm dealing with a patient and they have this, 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 and this. I want to be able to perform a surgery on them, but also supplement their healing with, acupuncture.
Right.
So now I can use AI to create these, mix these ideas and create something new.
I don't know if using it in the medical field is necessarily the place I'd want to start with mixing and matching and those kinds of things, but
okay,
I get your point though.
Let's take a simple example. So I was on a meditation retreat this weekend. Yeah.
Okay.
So there was a chef there who made absolutely fantastic meals for 2 days, and there were 18 people in the retreat. Some people had allergies to nuts. Some people had allergies to this. And
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah.
It is brilliant.
Yeah. So, the chef has to do a lot of work to figure out what ingredients he can play with to create the meals for 2 days. And now with AI, like you could just put in everything into AI and say, hey, give me some recipes that will satisfy everybody's desires and be, compatible.
I saw that in a LinkedIn post I think you'd done a couple weeks ago or a week ago. Correct. I thought that was a brilliant idea. In fact, a wife and I were talking about doing something similar, but for just dinner. Like, hey, just take inventory of what's in your fridge and say, hey, what can I do with these ingredients for the next week?
Exactly.
Dinner decision fatigue is a real thing.
You could actually, they just OpenAI, ChatGPT and other AI platforms released this new feature in the last couple of weeks where you could actually just take a phone, turn on the video, and you don't even have to type anymore. You can just say, hey, this is my fridge. These are the ingredients. Just figure out what it is and give me some recipes. It'll just like scan it. And figure out, oh, you have like these mayonnaise, they have these pickles, they have this chicken, and you do something like that with it.
There was another idea you had that was mentioned in your pitch. You talked about using AI to manage or to be more aware of emotions. Was that, thinking of that right?
That's right. So that's my core work. That is my
Damn it. You took my idea, huh? That was my $1 million idea, but I've been trying to find someone to code it for me.
Yeah. No, well, it could be, I'm not, I'm biased here a little bit, but it could be like a $1 trillion idea.
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
So what
is yours? Let me hear your version. Let me see how it matches the one I had in my head.
Well, okay. So at the fundamental level, our world is based on two things. Products and services. So when you go in the market, you either buy a product or you buy a service. And at the end of the day, why you are buying that is to satisfy an urge, an emotion that you want to feel. So, if you're feeling hungry, you buy food. But you buy food that will really satisfy your, not just hunger, but your desire for a certain
current desire that you have.
Let's say you buy a car, you buy a red flashy sports car, and the reason why you buy that car is obviously to go from one point to another, but the reason why you pick a red flashy sports car is to satisfy inner desire, you know?
Yeah.
And these desires are emotions, unfulfilled emotions that you want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you think about it, the whole economy is based on emotions and intermediate steps to get to those emotions.
Yep. I would agree with that. Okay. Yep.
Now with AI, you could actually manufacture those emotions in your psyche without going through a product or service.
Oh, you're doing this completely opposite of what I had in mind. Okay.
Okay.
So you use, oh, wow, that's interesting. No, the idea I had, and I'm going to make sure I say this on microphone so I have the recording, but I may bleep it all out so it doesn't get stolen. But
yeah.
I want something that takes control of my webcam, analyzes my face and emotions in real time while I'm trading in the market, and gives me an analysis of what emotion I'm currently being dictated by in this moment.
Well, I am not here to burst your bubble, but this is already available.
Okay, that's fine. Where is it? Where can I get it?
start your Zoom, and there are a bunch of plugins. Like there is one that I use, Read.ai.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Zoom at.
Zoom has plugins, that. And then they will analyze your emotions in real time. It's meant for meetings. But then, you know, it will also tell you what is going on with
the Morphcast is what it looks like. Attention trap. Man. Okay. Yeah. You gave me something to play with. That'll work. All right. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So all kinds of things are going to be possible with AI, as you can see, you know, but my work revolves around creating these emotions, self-awareness, self-image. Like my focus for the next few decades will be, for the next 5 years, I'm looking to help a few people and use my methodologies and set them up to win a Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
a good goal. I like that.
So and my life mission is to help 20 such Nobel Prizes. In my
20.
Lifetime.
Yeah. You think you can get to 20? What's the record?
There is no record. This is a crazy idea.
Sounds like you need to get somebody on the board.
Yeah. No, I have good people around.
All right. So how far is your project the one that you're kind of teasing there? How far is that in development? Does that prototype? Does it have a product for sale now? Or
we have a prototype. We have tested it in the market. We have in the business scenarios. It has done very, very well. We have a lot of testimonials. People have, you know, multiplied their income levels. People have.
What's the name of it?
It's called AI Merge. It's AI a product Merge. That we are offering. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a website for it?
Yeah. Go to tetranoodle.com.
Okay. I saw that on your LinkedIn. Yeah. Have you heard of Crowley, Christian Crowley? I just talked to him like a week or two ago about Sanctum AI, which they're building language learning models that are offline that you basically can run on your computer, so you don't have to let big data steal all your ideas. And
sure. Yeah, there's going to be like tons and tons of AI models coming out. Like think like shoe brands or shirt brands or car brands. It's going to be very similar world full of AI models.
Are they going to be all specific, like for very specific instances? Are they all going to be competing with each other?
Well, think about, a car. If you buy a Toyota versus Honda, you know, maybe one has, four cup holders and another one has five cup holders,
Maybe one gets better gas mileage and the other one has better engine life or maintenance costs.
And one thing, you brought up stealing ideas. I want to address that. Like, trust me, I have been in this for decades.
Nobody steals your ideas.
even if they steal it, it's execution that counts. Mm-hmm. And even if they are good at execution, your fingerprint is going to be different than their fingerprint.
Yep.
Okay. So innovation and technology, it thrives with competition, with innovation. So I will recommend people to now, especially now with AI, okay? The whole thing about intellectual property and patents and, nobody stealing my idea, I think it's a thing of the past.
Yeah. Well, and to be honest, like, you could tell your idea to many people. The chances that any of them are actually going to try to do anything with it is very, very small. Exactly. It's your project. It's your idea. Nobody really is going to steal your idea.
Exactly. I mean, even if they steal it, I'm telling you, their fingerprint will be different. And,
I'd be happy just to have the product.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. Exactly. So think the Elon Musk, he invested like billions into Tesla, and then he open sourced all his patents. All the patents are available freely to anybody to use. Mm-hmm. And what that did was it created an electric vehicle industry that helped Tesla become the biggest car company.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. Huh. Embracing the competition. Smart.
Yeah. So this is, these are, and then with AI, it's like, you know, AI today, ChatGPT has an IQ of about 155.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Einstein had an IQ of 170.
Yeah.
Okay. In the next year, ChatGPT and other AI platforms are going to have an IQ of about 1,000.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
So when we think, ideas are dime a dozen. Intelligence is a commodity now.
Execution is what matters.
Exactly.
Execution is what matters. That's a great point. And I think that's probably a good spot to put an end to this. Anything else that you want to leave people with? Any other places you want to point them to for resources?
Just connect with me. Visit my website, tetranrule.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn if you are interested in anything that I said, or if you want to, like, you know, really embrace AI and really, really, like, take advantage. I mean, there is going to be more billionaires made in the next 5 years than any time in history.
Yep. And that's not just because of inflation.
Correct. Exactly. So if people want to take advantage of this opportunity, you know, discuss some ideas or, you know, just like really embrace this technology, reach out to me and then, we'll chat.
All right. I love it, man. Please, everyone, join me in thanking our guests for stopping by Christmas week. Make sure you check out Manoj's links in the show notes if you want to say thank you personally like that. You can stay up to date with the podcast by visiting bandoftraderspodcast.com, where you can find all the deals and discounts we've collected over the years. I will be back soon with another exciting episode for you to like, share, and subscribe. Till then, have a great holiday weekend.
Thank you.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.